I'll read the opening. Now, it begins with a menacing little refrain that appears three or four times. Who let the dogs in? This, we fear, is going to be the question. Who let the dogs in? Who let the dogs in? Who? Who? Now, the novel begins with Desmond, a teenager, writing to an agony aunt for advice, because his mother, Lionel's older sister, died when she was very young, and he's been an orphan and protected by Lionel, who's 6 years older, and for all his faults has looked after Desmond. So he's addressing an agony aunt. Dear Genevieve, I'm having an affair with an older woman. She's a lady of some sophistication and makes a refreshing change from the teenagers I know. The sex is fantastic and I think I'm in love. But there's one very serious complication, and it's this. She's my gran. Desmond Pepperdine, Desmond Des, Desi, the author of this document, was 15 and a half, and his handwriting nowadays was self-consciously elegant. The letters used to slope backward, but he patiently trained them to slope forward. And when everything was smoothly conjoined, he started adding little flourishes. Using the computer he now shared with his uncle, Des had given himself a course on calligraphy, among several other courses. He writes on the plus side, the age difference is surprisingly... He crossed that bit out and resumed. It started a fortnight ago when she rang up and said, it's the plumbing again, love. And I said, Nan, I'll be right over. She lives in a granny flat under a house about a mile away, and there's always something wrong with its plumbing. Now, I'm no plumber, but I learnt a bit from my Uncle George, who's in the trade. I sorted it out for her, and she said, why not stay for a few drinks? We ought to say at this point that Desmond is learning to write well and taking it seriously, but apostrophes and hyphens are beyond him. Drinks is here spelled D-R-I-N-K apostrophe S. Calligraphy and sociology and anthropology and psychology, but not yet punctuation. He was a good little speller, Des, but he knew how weak his punctuation was because he'd just begun a course on it. And punctuation, he quite rightly intuited, was something of an art, he writes on. So we had a few Dubonnets, which I'm not used to, and she was giving me these funny looks, L-O-O-K apostrophe S. She's always got the Beatles on, and she was playing all the slow ones, like Golden Slumbers, Yesterday, and She's Leaving Home. Then Gran says, it's so hot, I'll just slip into my nightdress. And she came back in a baby doll. He was trying to give himself an education, not at Squeers Free, recently singled out, he read in the Diston Gazette, as the worst school in England. But his understanding of the planet and the universe had inconceivable voids in it. He was repeatedly amazed by the tonnage of what he didn't know. So we had a few more drinks, and I was noticing how well preserved she is. She's taken good care of herself, and she's really fit, considering the life she's led. So after a few more drinks, she says, aren't you frying alive in that blazer? Come over here, handsome, and give us a cuddle. Well, what could I do? She put a hand on my thigh and slid it up my shorts. I'm only human, aren't I? The stereo was playing, I Should Have Known Better. But one thing led to another, and it was mind-blowing. For instance, this is interjected, the only national newspaper Des had ever read was The Morning Lark, and Genevieve, his addressee, was its agony aunt, or better say, its ecstasy aunt. The page she presided over consisted of detailed accounts of perhaps wholly imaginary liaisons, and her replies consisted of a lewd pun followed by an exclamation mark. Desmond's tale was not imaginary. He writes on, "Now you must believe me, this is all very out of character. It was never meant to be," meant spelled M-E-A-N apostrophe T. "Okay, we live in Diston, where that sort of thing isn't much frowned upon. And okay, my gran had a mischievous youth. But she's a respectable woman. The thing is, she's got a big birthday coming up, and I reckon it's turned her head. As for myself, my background is strict Christian, at least on my father's side, Pentecostalist. And you see, Genevieve, I've been very unhappy since my mum, Scylla, passed away 3 years ago. I can't find the words. I needed gentleness. And when Gran touched me like that, well..." Des had no intention of actually mailing his letter to Genevieve, whose partly naked body also adorned the page-headed, not ecstasy aunt, but agony angel. He is writing it simply to ease his own mind. He imagined Genevieve's dependably non-judgmental reply, something like, "At least you're having a grand old time." Des wrote on, "Apart from the legal question, which is worrying me sick, there's another huge problem. Her son, Lionel, is my uncle, and he's like a father to me when he's not in prison. See, he's an extremely violent criminal. And if he finds out I'm giving his mum one, he'll kill me, literally." It might be argued that this was a grave underestimation of Lionel's views on trespass and reprisal. The immediate goal for Des was to master the apostrophe. After that, the arcana of the colon and the semicolon, the hyphen, the dash, the slash. He wrote on, "On the plus side, hyphenated, the age gap, hyphenated, is not that big. In fact, Granny Grace is 24 years older than Desmond. And the reason for this is the strange demographics of Diston, the imaginary southeast London borough where they live. Diston, with its pregnant primary schoolers and toothless hoodies, its wheezing 20-year-olds, arthritic 30-year-olds, crippled 40-year-olds, demented 50-year-olds, and non-existent 60-year-olds. The age gap is not that big. See, Granny Grace was an early starter and fell pregnant when she was 12, just like my mum." He heard the thick clunks of the locks. He looked with horror at his watch. He tried to stand upright on deadened legs, and suddenly Lionel was there. Lionel was there, a great white shape leaning on the open door with his brow pressed to his raised wrist, panting huskily and giving off a faint grey steam in his purple singlet. Under his other arm he was carrying a consignment of lager, 2 dozen, covered in polythene, brand Cobra. "You're back early, Uncle Lai." He held up a calloused palm. They waited. In his outward appearance, Lionel was brutally generic. The slab-like body, the full lump of the face, the tight-shaved crown with its tawny stubble. Out in the great world city, there were hundreds of thousands of young men who looked pretty much exactly like Lionel Asbow. In certain lights and settings, he resembled, some said, the England and Manchester United prodigy, striker Wayne Rooney. Not exceptionally tall and not fat, but exceptionally broad and exceptionally deep. Des saw his uncle every day, and Lionel was always one size bigger than expected. He even had Rooney's gap-tooth smile. Well, the upper incisors were widely spaced, yet Lionel very seldom smiled. You only saw them when he sneered. We better say something about Lionel's idiolect, his way of speaking. A little bit later, Lionel says, "Dogs won't attack a human being. That's a myth, that is." Des listened. Lionel pronounced myth, myth. Full possessive pronouns, your, their, my, still made guest appearances in his English. And he didn't invariably defy grammatical number. They was, he were, and so on. But his verbal prose and his accent were in steep decline, until a couple of years ago, Lionel pronounced Lionel, Lionel. But these days, he pronounced Lionel, Lionel, or even Loinu. Lionel said, what are you doing there with that pen? What's that you writing? Guess it. Des thought fast. It's about poetry, Uncle Lai. Poetry, said Lionel, and started back. Yeah, a poem called The Fairy Queen. The what? I despair of you sometimes, Des. Why aren't you out smashing windows? It's not healthy. Oh yeah, listen to this. You know that bloke I bashed up in the pub the other Friday? Mr. Ross Knowles, if you please. He's only pressing charges. Grasp me. Will you credit it? Desmond knew how Lionel was likely to feel about such a move. One night last year, Lionel came home to find Des on the black leatherette sofa, innocently slumped in front of Crime Watch. The result was one of the longest and noisiest slappings he'd ever received at his uncle's hands. They ask him members of the public, said Lionel, standing in front of the giant screen with his arms akimbo, to think on their own neighbors. Crime Watch. It's like a program for pedophiles. That disgusts me. Now, Des said, he went to the law, and that's the lowest of the low, that is. What are you going to do, Uncle Light? Well, I've been asking around. It turns out he's a loner. Lives in a bedsit, so there's no one I can go and terrify except him. But he's in hospital. So I'll take him a bunch of grapes. You feed the dogs. Yeah, only we're out of Tabasco. The dogs, Joe and Jeff, were Lionel's psychopathic pit bulls. Their domain was the narrow balcony off the kitchen where, all day, the two of them snarled, paced, and swiveled, and prosecuted their barking war with a pack of Rottweilers that lived on the roof of the next high-rise along. Don't lie to me, Lionel, said Lionel. Don't lie to me, Desmond, said Lionel quietly. Don't ever lie to me. I'm not. You told me you fed them, and you never give them the Tabasco. Uncle, I didn't have the cash. They've only got the big bottles, and they're $5.95. That's no excuse. You should have nicked one. You spent £30 on a dictionary, and you can't spare a couple of bob for the dogs. I never spent £30. Gran give it me. She wanted on the crossword, the prize crossword. Joe and Jeff, they not pets, Desmond Pepperdine. They tools of me trade. Lionel's trade was still something of a mystery to Des. He knew that part of it had to do with the very hairiest end of debt collection, and he knew that part of it involved selling on. Lionel's word for selling on was reset. Des knew this by simple logic, because extortion with menaces and receiving stolen property were what Lionel most often went to prison for. He stood there, Lionel, doing something he was very good at, disseminating tension. Des loved him deeply and more or less unquestioningly, but he had always felt slightly ill in his presence. Not ill at ease, ill. You're back early, Uncle Lai, he repeated as airily as he could. Where you been? Cynthia. I don't know why I bestir myself. Gah, the state of that Cynthia. The spectral blonde called Cynthia, or Symphia, as he pronounced it, was the nearest thing Lionel had to a childhood sweetheart, in that he started sleeping with her when she was 10, and Lionel was 9. She was also the nearest thing he had to a regular girlfriend, in that he saw her regularly, once every 4 or 5 months. Of women in general, Lionel sometimes had this to say. More trouble than they worth, if you ask me. Women, I'm not bothered about women. Desmond thought that this was probably just as well. Women in general should be very pleased that Lionel wasn't bothered about them. Des, that's Cynthia, said Lionel with a surfeited leer. Christ, even during the other... I was thinking, Lionel, you wasting your youth. Lionel, go home. Go home, boy. Go home and watch some decent porn. Dez picked up the Mac and got smartly to his feet. Here I'm off. Now I'm meeting up with me mates. Well, do something useful, said Lionel. Steal a car. Hey, guess what? Your Uncle Ringo won the lottery. He never. How much? £12.50. It's a mug's game, the lottery, if you ask me. Oi, I've been meaning to ask you something. When you creep off at night... Dez was standing there holding the Mac in both hands like a waiter with a tray. Lionel was standing there with the Cobras in both hands like a drayman with a load. When you creep off at night, you carry a blade. Uncle Lai, you know me. Well, you should. For your own security and your peace of mind, you're going to get yourself striped or worse. There's no fist fights anymore, not in distant. There's only knife fights to the death or guns. Well, he relented, I suppose they can't see you in the fucking dark. And Dez just smiled with his clean white teeth because Dez is mixed race. Lionel said, take a knife from the drawer on your way out. One of them black ones. Dez didn't meet up with his mates. He didn't have any mates and he didn't want any mates. He crept off to his grands. In dusty Diston, also known as Diston Town or more simply Town, nothing and no one was over 60 years old. On an international chart for life expectancy, Diston would appear between Benin and Djibouti, 54 for men and 57 for women. And that wasn't all. On an international chart for fertility rates, Diston would appear between Malawi and Yemen, 6 children per couple or per single mother. Thus the age structure in Diston was strangely shaped, but still, Town would not be thinning out. Dez was 15, Lionel was 21, Grace was 39. He bent to unlatch the gate, he skipped down the 7 stone steps, he knocked the knocker. He listened. Here came the shuffle of her fluffy slippers, and in the background, as ever, the melodic purity of a Beatles song, her all-time favorite, When I'm 64. We'll just read a bit about when Lionel gets famous. This is a chapter headed Lionel Asbo, Lotto Luck. It was as he was mucking out, which is to say, it was as he was passing his spoutless kettle of shit to the aproned orderly that Lionel Asbo first got wind of the fact that he had just won very slightly less than £140 million. Yeah, you've had a bit of luck, apparently. Don't know what, said Officer Phipps. The light wants a word. You'll be sent for. The who? The light, you know, light of your love. Gov, love, gov. That's rhyming slang. Jesus, you need your head seen to, you do. And rhyming slang's all crap. Officer Phipps continued to go about his tasks. According to the gov, you've had a bit of good fortune. And he was well pissed off about it and all. Yeah, what's this then? You'll be sent for. Lionel turned to his cellmate, Pete New, and said, drop charges. Look like they've seen reason and dropped charges. Yes, Lionel, could very well be. Stalwart was a remand prison for those awaiting trial or sentence, and its inmates were banged up on a colourful array of charges, banged up for non-payment of alimony, banged up for serial rape, banged up for possession of marijuana, banged up for knifing a family of 6. Pete New was banged up for having a fat dog. Banged up for having a fat dog, said Lionel on his first day there. I know, said New, sounds stupid. Yes, well, 12 reprimands and 5 final warnings from the social. Tinkerbell, New's basset hound, was 14 stone. She could only sleep and eat. She lay there on the mattress with her limbs splayed out flat. New said, she has to be turned, see, or you try, and she creates. She makes a right old racket, and then the neighbors. Lionel said, what do you have a dog for if you let it get into that state? You ought to give it an appropriate diet. And Lionel, by the way, feeds his dogs on Tabasco and mutton vindaloo to keep them tasty. For New shrugged humbly and limped back to his bunk. He had his left leg in a light cast. Pete New had managed to snap a ligament while watching TV. 11 hours in the same position, and when he readied himself to get to his feet, he said he heard it pop. You snapped a ligament watching TV. I know, it doesn't sound too clever either. You want to brush up your ideas, mate. Well, you know how it is, Mr. Asbo. Call me Lionel. Okay, I'll just finish with one more page. At 2 p.m, Officer Phipps came to fetch him. Best of luck, Lionel, said Pete New from his bunk. Asbo sauntered freely down the stone passage. He was led up 4 flights of steps, then through a hall bracingly redolent of vomit and carbolic, and then out onto the colonnade with its dripping arches. The governor's door stood wide open. Slight, bald, with frizzled eyebrows and a bulging forehead, Governor Wolfe did not at all resemble the bearer of good news as he said dryly, Ah, here he is, the estimable Mr. Asbo. I suppose you just plug away at it, don't you, Lionel, month after month, with your brain hurting and your tongue sticking out of the corner of your mouth, plugging away at the lottery. The lottery? Of course I don't. Think I'm stupid. And what about it? What about it? Lionel barely remembered. He had only stolen the coupon to give a certain old lag a niggle. And it was all a load of bollocks anyway. He stood there with his hands in his pockets. Governor Wolfe, who had long ago stopped trying to make Lionel call him sir, said again, what about it? Sighing, Lionel said, okay, you got me up here because I won 15 quid. It's a mug's game, the lottery, if you ask me. Governor Wolfe threw his pencil onto the desk and said, well, I suppose this proves that God's got a sense of humor. Lionel grew alert. It's more than £15, Asbo. It's a substantial sum. Like a soldier, Lionel went from the at-ease posture to full attention. How substantial, sir? Thank you very much. Thank you.